This podcast is about your future. What if the next years of your life can be the best years of your life? When full-time work becomes optional, you'll have the time to do all the things you've always wanted to do, if only you had the time. And soon you will. But to make the most of it, you'll need to be well prepared, and that goes well beyond your financial planning. Each week, your host, Joe Casey, is inviting you into conversations with his guests to bring you insights, inspiration, and practical ideas to design your new life, a life you'll build around what matters most to you and on your own terms. Let's get started.
I hate to break this to you, but if you're planning for retirement, you also need to be thinking about what's life going to be like when I get older? And you might be wondering, how will technology help make life easier then? Well, there's a lot going on in that arena, and our guest today will help us get smarter about what's happening in that space. Karen Etkin is the author of The Age Tech Revolution, a book about the intersection of technology and aging. She's also the founder of thegerontechnologist.com, a media platform that covers the global age tech ecosystem and offers online courses through the Age Tech Academy. She's also the founder and director of Age Lab IL, an interdisciplinary R&D center focusing on age tech. Named one of the most influential people in aging, she is a sought-after public speaker and advisor to age tech startups, investors in the longevity economy, care providers, and organizations who work on innovation in aging. Previously, she was the first employee at Intuition Robotics, maker of LEQ, a pioneering social robot designed with and for older adults, and a co-founder and VP of product at Sensei.ai, a startup that developed the first artificial intelligence solution for remote care monitoring. She holds a master's in gerontology and a bachelor's in science and life sciences from Ben-Gurion University. Karen, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me, Joe.
And congratulations on your new book.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So you were originally headed to become a scientist, but you ended up choosing a different path. What's a gerontechnologist and what's age tech?
These are very great questions. So I'm actually a gerontologist by training. So I did start out wanting to become a life scientist, and I did get a life sciences degree. But after a few years at the university, I realized that I was actually very, very passionate about being at a place of work that has a social impact. And working with older adults felt like the right place to be. And so I went and got a gerontology degree. And right out of school, I was actually recruited to start up called Intuition Robotics as their first employee to build a social robot for older adults. And what I realized was that technology could actually make massive impact on people's lives. And technology was scalable. And it really, really drew me in. And another thing that I had realized was that we were surrounded by many other startups developing wonderful technological solutions for the various challenges of aging. So out of this realization, the Gerontechnologist was born. It's sort of this media platform that covers the global age tech ecosystem. And I've been very fortunate to have it not only as a platform to express myself, but also as part of my life that I call it my night job that really brings many wonderful opportunities my way. And I get to have a lot of meaningful and insightful conversations with people from all over the world, just like yourself, Joe. And this is something that could never have happened any other way.
Absolutely. And tell us about the two trends that are colliding and creating a great opportunity for the development of new technology that'll help older adults.
So the one trend that everyone, I'm sure, realizes is the aging of the population, right? We have an unprecedented number of people reaching very old ages, right? In some countries, it's 25 or even almost 30% of the population. That's great because people today get to have a long life after retirement. And for most of these years, it will be a happy, independent, active, healthy life most of the time for most people. So that is one trend. And the other trend is this digital transformation our society is going through, right? Everything we do today is done online or can be done online. Our life has become more digital than ever. We wake up in the morning, we check out our phones. It's the last thing we do when we go to bed at night. And these sort of trends, the intersection of these two trends is sort of where HTEC is at. Coming back to your first question, is HTEC is technology that is designed with and for older adults, right? So it's not just designed to meet the various challenges of aging, but also to make sure that people can live life to the fullest for as long as they live, basically.
One thing I noticed in your book is that people your age, you're in your 30s, and people my age, I'm in my 60s, define older adults differently. So how do they do that, and what is an older adult?
That is a great question. Well, technically, if you look at most countries, older adults, or if you ask like the OECD or the World Health Organization, they defined old age as starting at around the age of 65, right? At around retirement age. But the reality is, when we look at people in their 60s or 70s in developed countries, you can almost say that 70 is the new 50, right? Because you meet these very vibrant and active people who don't look like the older person that you see in the media, right? These old and frail people. So you could say that old age starts at 80 these days, right? Because people are in their 60s and 70s are still very much in good health. They're active. They're working. They don't necessarily fit the ageist stereotypes that are very common in our society. That being said, I don't necessarily think that older adults or older people and younger people define an older adult differently, because there could be some internalized ageism. So, right? So even if you're in your 60s, you might have a negative perception of older people. That's like, ageism is, it doesn't skip anyone, right? And the interesting thing is that researchers have found very recently, actually, there was this wonderful Euro-ageism report that I quoted in the book by two wonderful researchers from Europe. I remember only one of their names, the guy Itai Menaheim. They actually found that ageism, or actually internalized ageism, could be a barrier for tech adoption for older adults, right? Because they can perceive themselves as less capable of using technology, even though that is not the case in most cases.
So my definition before our conversation was, an older adult is someone older than me.
That's also something that researchers have found, that when you ask people when does old age start, they would always, 100% of the time, that it starts at an age that is older than them. However, if you ask someone in their 20s, they might say that old age starts at 60. And if you ask someone in their 60s, they will say 75. So there is this definite variance, I would say.
So you mentioned there are some misperceptions in different directions about older adults and technology. What are the facts?
The facts are that older adults are adopting technology at increasingly growing numbers in the past decade. And this trend of tech adoption has been around since before COVID. And the pandemic has definitely accelerated it. It accelerated tech adoption and tech usage for everyone. And that is also true for older adults. They bought tech devices. They adopted more video chat than ever before, not just to chat with their children and grandchildren, but also to consume healthcare services and to use telehealth and to chat with their friends. And their book club suddenly was online rather than in person. So we saw this massive boost in adoption, which is great. And also, everyone suddenly realized, and when I say everyone, I mean like the general population, everyone who has an older loved one in their lives, and governments, everyone realized that it's not a luxury to have older adults use technology. It's a necessity in our society. And one point in time where that became crystal clear is when the vaccines started rolling out and you had to register online to get your vaccine appointment. So we had, on one hand, we had vulnerable population, vulnerable to COVID, that it was everyone's top priority to get older adults vaccinated first, right? They were first in line in most countries. And then you had these online registration systems that weren't, they either weren't friendly to non-digital natives, or people just didn't have the devices or the digital skills to use them. So this was like a sudden state of emergency, another state of emergency caused by COVID, which was resolved on a local level by volunteers most of the time. But I think it really gave governments a kick in the butt and really made them, that was the one thing that made governments fund more digital literacy programs and basically to make sure that everyone had access to the internet at minimum.
And I just picture a lot of people, we older adults, on Zoom, using WhatsApp in the other hand while riding the Peloton or something. And it's been a whole different lifestyle during this period of time. So as I mentioned, I'm in my 60s and I grew up in the US watching a TV show called The Jetsons. And people of a certain age will be relating to that as they listen. And I thought I'd be flying around in my flying car by now. But in your book, you paint a more realistic but exciting picture of how older adults will use technology in our daily lives in the not so far away future. What do you think it looks like 10 years from now?
10 years from now, I definitely expect us to have autonomous vehicles, which I think will go a long way towards enabling mobility in the community for people who either can drive or don't want to drive for various reasons. So I think autonomous vehicles will be amazing for everyone, not just for riders, but also for pedestrians, because we know that, unfortunately, older pedestrians are a group of people that gets injured or killed disproportionately in motor vehicle crashes involving pedestrians. So that's one thing. And I also think we'll probably have, these days we have all of these sensors, right? We can have sensors installed, and like wall-mounted sensors, wearable sensors in the ring, in the watch, in the pendant, whatever. And I think 10 years down the line, we'll have ambient sensors sort of embedded in our homes, sensing us, sensing what we need, and delivering what we need based on their understanding of the surroundings, based on whatever readings they get from our bodies. Laurie Olerv calls it the Internet of IOB. Internet of behavior. We have IoT, we'll have IOB, right? The sensors will be able to predict what we need and basically give it to us. And I think that that can go a long way towards aging in place, right? Because one of the barriers to aging in place is that oftentimes people's homes are not very customizable, right? It costs a lot of money to customize your home, to adapt your changing needs as you grow older. And your community might not be so adaptive if you're not as agile as you used to be 20 or 30 years ago. And I think that technology can definitely help us with that. And I also expect us to have to welcome more robotics and automation into our lives. Because at the end of the day, some of the things that people struggle with in the home as they grow older is just like household maintenance and household chores. And that's not a reason to leave your home, right? Because most prefer to age in place. So we can definitely automate a lot of that. And we can definitely use technology to predict our needs and to help us live longer, better, healthier, more active, and basically help us maintain our general well-being, both physically and emotionally, as we grow older, and to enable anyone who wants to age in place.
So in your book, you mentioned the longevity explorers. Could you tell us about them and what can we learn from them?
This is a great question. So the Longevity Explorers is this wonderful organization that's sort of was born out of Taken Hands Life. So it's led by Dr. Richard Caro, who is obviously a tech entrepreneur. He's very experienced in the tech industry, ran multiple companies. And in the past few years, he's been running Taken Hands Life, and the Longevity Explorers is sort of a platform for tech companies and tech startups to meet older adults where they are and actually get to ask them what they need. Have like these very simple conversations that people sometimes don't have. Ask older adults what they need. Ask them about their challenges, ask them about their day-to-day life, share with them what they're working on, what they're building get feedback on the technology, on the product, on the user experience, on whether they're actually solving an actual need that someone's willing to get, put their hand in their pocket, grab the wallet and pay for this. And I think definitely, because I'm such a strong believer in user-centered design, especially if you're a younger founder and a younger entrepreneur building a tech-enabled product or service for someone who's 30 years older than you, 30, 40, 50 years older than you, you have to include people, older people, in the design process of your product. And the longevity clause is a wonderful way to do it. And actually, it's funny that you're asking about this, because Dr. Richard Caro and myself, along with two other wonderful experts in user experience, are running a founders bootcamp next month. So we're going to work with a group of founders and basically give them the distilled insights from Richard's long-time experience with the longevity explorers. So it's going to be super fun.
Well, it sounds great. So you mentioned founders, and that leads to the topic of disruption, what's ripe for disruption. And one of the things that you highlight that's ripe for disruption is retirement. Not only disruption, but due for a renaming, which couldn't agree more. You write about two approaches that people should have in mind that should be planning for. How should people be thinking about reinvention and reskilling as alternatives to the traditional retirement that's quickly becoming obsolete?
This is a great question. And I think what will happen eventually, and what's already sort of happening, is that older adults who are near retirement or even have already retired are sort of unretiring, right? They're either starting a second career and pivoting their career for the second or third time in their life, or they're starting a business, or they're just using the skills that they acquired through decades of work as becoming a consultant or a mentor. Doesn't necessarily have to be paid. People sometimes just want to do it because they want to contribute from their experience, and they already have the money, they don't need more. So I think there are so many ways this could develop. And one great thing that came out of the pandemic, sort of one silver lining, is that the fact that everyone can, or not everyone, but many white collar jobs can now be done remotely, and sometimes even the default for some companies. And I think that sort of levels the playing field for many people, not just people working, living in rural areas and not in dense urban areas, but also for older adults who might not want to commute 1 hour to work and 1 hour back. And I think that the whole flexible work schedule that suddenly everyone's talking about and employees are demanding, that's also definitely helpful for older people who might not, like I said, people don't necessarily want to continue working because they need the money. And you might want to keep on working because you enjoy what you do, but you don't want to work 12-hour days anymore. You're done with that. Been there, done that. So I think all of the changes that are happening in the workplace are amazing for older adults. And I think also the fact that you can very quickly reskill yourself or upskill yourself online these days is also, it has tremendous value, because you don't need to go back to university anymore to become something else, right? And you don't need to have a brick and mortar store or office to start a business anymore. So I think all of these wonderful changes enabled by technology can really push forward this unretirement and the redefining of retirement and redefining of what people do professionally for like the third act of their lives, right?
Absolutely. And you mentioned robotics before, and you've been involved in that for quite some time. And the robots aren't just coming, they're here. So what role do you see robots playing with older adults in the future?
So when we look at robots, traditionally, we can sort of divide robots to two types, right? You have on one hand, service robots, robots you would see in factories, or the iRobot that everyone has mopping the floors. So that's one type. And the other type is sort of social robots that sort of can interact with us. And they're a machine, yes, but they're like this new type of machine that has all of these wonderful capabilities and can do things for you that don't necessarily include chores, but it can interact with you and it can be a companion of sorts. And some people don't like the idea. However, think about how many hours a day you spend with your phone, holding your phone, the emotional attachment you have to this 6-inch screen-based device. And if you have a device like Eliq, the robot that I had the honor of working on, that not only can have a conversation with you, but it can also express itself in various ways, not just speech, but also movements and lights, and it can display content on the screen. It can make like sounds if it's upset. So we are sort of almost, as humans, we almost can help ourselves, but we bond with these devices and we create this type of connection. That's not exactly, it's not human connection, but it's also more than what we had so far with machines. And I think if we use it right, if we do a good job at it and we use these types of robots as enablers for us to extend our human capabilities, I think it can be a wonderful addition to our lives.
I'm just worried I'll get a robot with a bad attitude.
Have you seen this movie? I think it was called Frank and I, about this older gentleman who got a robot from his kid, and I think they ended up robbing a jewelry store or something. That was brilliant.
Oh, I think I saw the trailer for that. I know exactly what you're talking about now. I'll definitely watch that. So you mentioned aging in place before, and a lot of our listeners are thinking about that. If someone is planning to age in place, how should they include technology in their planning?
This is a great question. I think it's very, very up to anyone's individual preference, right? So one person will want to have their whole home equipped with like the latest and greatest sensors of technology. They will want a robot on each floor, a robot mowing the lawn, sensors embedded in their walls, mounted on the ceiling. They want to wear all the sensors they can wear. So this is one type of person.
The type of person that's going to want a robot to oversee the other robots.
Exactly. Because it's going to waste a lot of your time. You don't want to manage all of these robots. So it's really up to any individual's preference. And I think definitely using all the sensors that we already have available to help us sort of monitor our wellness and well-being, I think that's awesome. We know that, for example, dehydration is a challenge for older adults. And so I got myself a water bottle with a sensor that's connected to my phone and it tracks my water intake. And if I don't drink enough water, it has like these little LEDs. So it will make this dance, right? So it will do something and it will nudge me. So we can definitely already use technology sort of to help us promote our own well-being and to be sort of a better version of ourselves. And we can also definitely have sensors that, for some people, falls is a concern, right? And so definitely people could use sensors for fall detection, which some of them can actually, since they already monitor the home for a prolonged period of time, they can also sort of let you know if you are at a greater risk of falling. Actually, the iOS devices can already do that. So that's great. So you can do that for falls. You can also definitely already use, there are multiple devices in the home that are capable of video chat. You can definitely use telehealth. You can't yet use robots to do everything around the house, but you can very soon, you will very, very soon be able to use robots to carry stuff around the house, even up and down the stairs. You will very soon probably have robots in your home who are able to fix meals and do the dishes. And, you know, one day you might have a robot arranging your groceries, right? The groceries you just had delivered to your door, you'll have them arranged in your pantry. So there are a lot of things that can already be done and many more things that will be available in the near future. And I definitely think, like I said in the beginning, it's up to everyone's personal preference. And I definitely think we can and should use technology to promote aging in place.
Another issue is caregivers. How will technology create new tools for caregivers?
This is a great question. So For many, many caregivers, technology is already a tool, right? So if you are a paid caregiver and you work either for an agency or you're self-employed, you can already sort of get some of the training you need online, right? Some home care providers use apps to help caregivers know where they need to be, when they need to be there, what are sort of the items that this particular client needs help with. And they can report back to the agency on what was done and what wasn't done. And if there was anything unusual during their shift, they can use that to report instead of calling the agency and waiting in line for someone to pick up and instead of like doing whatever they need to do after their shift. Some of that is already available. As for family caregivers, obviously care coordination is a challenge for many people. So there are already care coordination apps available and many online caregiver resources that include not only like information and sort of these knowledge bases, but some of these platforms can connect families with certified elder care professionals or care managers to basically help them with whatever they need and help them fulfill their role as a family caregiver better and with less stress. And in the future, what I keep saying to basically everyone who's willing to listen is that any type of technology that enables older adults to be more independent and to live life the way they see fit, sort of by extension, is technology that helps caregivers, right? Because if your older loved one is able to get on a phone or on an app and get a ride, and you don't have to do that for them, that is a great service for the caregiver as well, right? And if you can have someone at the click of a button come to your loved one's home to change a light bulb or do whatever it needs to be done around the home, then when you get there, and when you, the family caregiver, you get to your loved one's home, you get to sit and have a conversation with them rather than changing the light bulb or doing whatever. So I think those are the things that I expect technology to help us with, basically to help human caregivers to do what they do best and what they actually want to do, and not all of the manual labor, which we can and we should automate.
Very big opportunity. One last question, if I could, if you have time.
Yep, sure.
What's the coolest technology for older adults that you'd like to see develop?
Every day someone asks me this question, I have a different answer. So coming back to your previous remark about the Jetsons and flying cars, I think definitely autonomous vehicles will be amazing and flying cars will be like the next level of cool. So I definitely, like, those are definitely two things that I look forward to. And of course, robots, because something that I personally believe in. And I had, like I said, I had the fortune and the honor to work on LEQ. And those are like the two major things that I think are not just cool, but I actually look forward to having them as sort of available for everyone.
A lot to think about. Really appreciate you taking us through and getting us smarter about technology for older adults. It's a bright future. A lot to do, a lot coming our way.
Thank you so much, Joe. And the EdgeTech Revolution is now available on Amazon. So anyone who wants to further educate themselves on the EdgeTech ecosystem and the opportunities in it, head over to Amazon and get your copy.
And you'll find a link in the show notes. Thanks, Karen.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks for joining me with a spin into the future of technology for older adults with Karen Etkin. While we're waiting for the emerging technologies that are coming our way, it's probably a good idea to share our takeaways. My first one is it may be a good idea to just step back and do a quick audit of how you're using technology today. And what's one new thing you might want to investigate that'll make your life a little easier or a lot easier? As she mentioned, there's a lot available today. A lot of things that can make household chores easier. What's in your way? What's something that you'd like to get done a different way? Can technology help? I know for me, one thing she mentioned was fall prevention. I've talked too many times on the podcast about my running injury where I had a broken hip. And right after that, I looked into what technology was available on fall prevention because the statistics on that are mind-boggling. in terms of the number of older adults that do end up breaking hips and the toll it takes both on health and also economically. It's a very costly proposition. And I discovered a prototype that had been built not too far from here where our two older daughters were born in Pennsylvania, where they had developed this inflatable thing using sensors that could be used to cushion a fall. But as she mentioned, the iOS technology already does this. So I've included an article, linked to an article in the show notes of how this is done today already, fall detection and warning through Apple iOS, mainly through the Apple Watch, but there's some other possibilities as well. So what's it for you? What's one thing that could make life easier? You may have caregiving responsibilities. Are there some things that can help you there? Second takeaway is, how about other people in your life? Are there people who you can work with to suggest some ways in which technology can help them? What's one thing? Maybe it's someone else who you know who has caregiving responsibilities or other things that where they're maybe not using technology as much as they could. And I don't know about you, but I immediately started to research water bottles with sensors. Great idea. I'll include a link of what I found to help you in the show notes. So keep an eye on the future, but look at what you can use today to make life easier and better.